Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us on the great world wide web. It's back. The last three guys to do a podcast, our 18th episode here, John Morgel along with
Daniel Bolton
and
Leon Brown.
And thanks so much for joining us here tonight. We're talking football, surprisingly enough, as it is the conference championship day. One team has already booked their trip into Atlanta. That would be the L.A. Rams. And I think, guys, the whole city of Atlanta is breathing a collective sigh of relief. It is proof that God upstairs does not hate us.
The New Orleans Saints not coming to Atlanta this year to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl. Listen, if you guys didn't watch the game today, it was a hard-fought ball game. The Saints looked like they wanted to take that next step ahead, but the Rams just kept fighting back, and they kept fighting and fighting and fighting. Towards the end, I was actually riding on the way here,
right?
And I heard that Ted Ginn had made an amazing catch. I didn't see the catch, but I heard he made an amazing grab. But now it's going to be put back in the shuffle. Why? Because the Rams are going to the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
Right? And instead, it's going to be Drew Brees' interception in overtime that's going to be talked about for a long time. The L.A. Rams, who I think some people thought were the best team coming into the in the NFL probably through the first 7 or 8 weeks of the year, because they had done ramshot. Their first loss was against the Saints.
Yeah.
Was at New Orleans in week 9 or 10 or something like that.
And this goes to your point from last week. Mm-hmm. It's hard to beat a team twice in one year.
It's hard to beat a team twice in one year. Why? Because there's film on them now.
Absolutely.
And the Saints, what I can say about both teams is that they were able to rely on defense.
Absolutely.
And it came down to a defensive play. This is the first time in NFL history that the top four offensive teams in the league are in conference championship plays. So, and for that first game to come down to a defensive stop, and Greg Zuerlein, who is one of the most underrated kickers in football, to hit a game-winning 57-yard field goal to send the Rams to Atlanta, is just an outstanding thing. And oftentimes, guys, losing is your greatest teacher.
It is.
And last year, when our Falcons actually went to L.A. to beat the Rams, they were the number 3 seed at that time. So they understood what it was to lose ball games. They came in this year. They knocked off Dallas, they knock off the Saints, and now they're in the Super Bowl.
And to your point again, in reference to the defense,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if they were stacking the box insanely on both teams. I mean, no rusher. I mean, we're talking about this is an ugly game for the rushers.
Yes, it was.
I mean, my goodness. We're talking about the Rams only had 77 yards of total rushing offense. It's horrible.
Same Rams team that has Ty Gurley and C.J. Anderson, who have been running the ball the last 3 or 4 weeks, just out of his mind.
Ty Gurley hurt.
Yeah, I think he is.
He's got to be hurt.
He's got some nagging injuries, yeah. Yes.
Four rushes for 10 yards? I mean, something's got to be up.
Mm-hmm. And this is probably a good thing for him. Rest him.
Exactly. I was just going to say that.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that. He's got that week off now. He can mm-hmm. rest, take it easy, get in the pool, do the physical therapy, and be in top shape for the return here to Atlanta and that Super Bowl win down over at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in 2 weeks.
But not to be outdone, Melvin Ingram had even a more disgusting game.
Right.
Oh, my bad.
Mark Ingram.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Melvin. Melvin Gordon is my guy. Melvin Gordon on my mind.
And then Melvin Ingram is the defensive lineman for your guys. For right. The L.A. Chargers. But trust me, man, I've been saying the San Diego Chargers all year long. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I have done nothing to correct you.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, he had a disgusting game. It's just, man.
They had some spots, Leon, when they broke out into nice little runs. They had runs of 10 to 15 yards. I think the real killer here, and what people don't realize, is the Saints, the game was tied at 20, and it was under 2 minutes to play. And on first down, they throw the football. Why would you do that? To just run it in, and then the next play, you calling a timeout. So now the clock is still stopping, and you still can't get into the end zone. And I just think that Sean Payton, that was it, one of the best coaches, probably the best coach in the league right now, this year at least. You know what I'm saying? In game situations, he's been able to stay up. He's been able to do preparation. But to miss that in the final 2 minutes of the game that really cost them, and it gave the Rams a chance to get down the field and score. And I think that the defense feeds off of the offense and feeds off the momentum of the offense. And that's, I think that's what tripped them up. But listen, better team won today, and the Rams proved to be that.
Well, what do you guys think about the call, the no call on when Lewis was going for the catch and he got just got upended?
It's playoff
football.
Playoff football.
You can't call it in the playoffs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
If this is week 8, maybe. But when there's the refs, it's an unspoken rule that the referees are not supposed to determine the game, especially big ones. So.
Because there was a call earlier in that game that was worse than that. That was the Mikael Roby Coleman, where he is holding the guy. He's holding, I think it was Ginn.
Blatantly.
He's holding him blatantly, and he puts his hand out, and they don't call that. That was a play that the Rams got away with.
So maybe it all evens out in the end. But, you know, the Saints fans, they're not going to think about that. I mean, I'm looking at a sign on the Pontchartrain Train Causeway in New Orleans. Simple little sign that just says, "We were robbed" by one of the Louisiana TOD people.
So here's what I have to say to the Saints fan. Listen, I'm sorry, not sorry.
Yeah.
But you won the coin toss in overtime, and that ball was deflected, and it was intercepted. Okay, there you go. You got what you wanted. Breeze got the ball first.
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
you got ahead.
How many times were you sitting there, okay, this is in the back?
Right. Yeah, if Drew Breeze has the ball first, we know that firsthand. You know, they came down and beat us, and we never touched the ball in overtime.
Yeah, and on top of that, they had like 15-plus drives to make it happen.
Well, I think the Super Bowl, I think that NFC Championship game is proof positive that the sports gods only partially hate, not completely hate, the city of Atlanta.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
You had a point. I was just going
to... No, go ahead. Okay. My point.
Because I was talking, because when we were talking before... We started recording this podcast, and my question to you guys now is, when we started this, when we came in today, we were like, okay, anybody but the Saints and the Patriots. But now that we know that the Rams are in, do we not care if the Patriots get in or not?
I don't think so. I mean, there are some Falcons fans out there who are probably listening to, who will listen to us when the podcast is loaded up, and they'll say, no, man, we still got something against the Patriots.
See, I would like to see the Rams come in, and I think if you're the city of Atlanta, it would be extremely cathartic to see the Rams come in and just wax the Patriots.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's what I think. And I think that would really help this city's mentality if that happened.
But you know what else would be good, though, to have the Rams and Sean McVay, because McVay doesn't get enough credit. You know, to have him and to have everybody buy into this man's system. This man is about as old as I am. I think he's 34. I'll be 35 in a couple of weeks. So he's about as old as I am, or as old as we are, Leon.
Right.
Younger than you two. I know that.
Yeah, younger than me, yes.
So, but his knowledge of the game and just, I think he brings youth and energy to that ball club, man, and they're starting to listen to, and they've been listening to him since he's gotten the position.
If he wins, he'll be the youngest coach since Mike Tomlin to win.
Yes, he will. He'll be the youngest coach in NFL history, if I'm not mistaken.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think John Madden was like 37 when he won his.
Was that 76 or 60? 76.
It was 76.
It was 76, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah, against the Vikings, wasn't it?
Yes. Yep.
Just about to say the purple people eaters. Carl Eller.
So when we look at Drew Brees, because I believe the MVP race is between him and
Mahomes.
Are they going to judge who wins the MVP based on championship performances, as far as the NFC Championship and AFC Championship? Do you believe so?
Or it depends how integral they are in the victory. Like if Mahomes throws for 350 yards, 4 touchdowns, and the Chiefs win 35-21. Yeah, they'll give it to him. But right now, the Chiefs are behind as Sony Michel, Georgia grad, got the first rushing touchdown for New England. And this could be a Rams-Patriots Super Bowl could be cathartic in another way, because you're going to get a couple of Georgia products on the field in the Super Bowl in Atlanta. I mean, you got Sony Michel.
Yeah, right.
And And Gurley, he went to Georgia.
Ty Gurley. Gurley went to Georgia. That's Mr. UGA.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it doesn't get much bigger than that.
I think they got a guard. Didn't Wynn go to New England as well? I think Isaiah Wynn. I think he went to New England as well. Yeah, it's going to be full of them. And to your point, Leon, it is Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin is the youngest head coach to win a Super Bowl at 36 years old. At that 2008-2009 season, they beat the Arizona Cardinals.
Right.
28-27-23. That was when it was just – that's when Santonio Holmes made probably one of the greatest catches in Super Bowl history.
And that Super Bowl actually, if I'm not mistaken, that actually guaranteed Kurt Warner's bid into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
He took a mean – I remember he took some shots. I remember – was that the same year – if – I yeah. Was that the Bounty Gate year? Well, that's because remember when he got touched up real, you know, they was touching the New Orleans Saints. Nah, that was the year New Orleans Saints won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
They were
yeah.
touching everybody up on purpose. They touched up Brett Favre, got him right, seen him, put him into retirement. They touched up Kurt Warner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was that game
where
everybody
man.
Was thinking, like, what was going on. It was kind of fishy going on.
Yeah, they was touching them. Oof. But, yeah, so I look at, like, you know, I think it's I think they should give it to Pat Mahomes, just on the strength of his. This is his pretty much his first year starting quarterback, and pretty much changing the complexion of the Chiefs. I mean, he's really bought into Andy Reid's system, and it's like he gave the Chiefs a bit of a new identity because Chiefs have never been known as. And within my lifetime. I could be wrong.
Right.
But I remember the last time the Chiefs been to the Super Bowl was in 1966.
69, I believe.
Was it 69?
I think it's 69, yeah. Because the Super Bowl, the first Super Bowl was 67, and Green Bay won the first two.
Right. They beat the first time they beat the Chiefs?
Yes, they beat the Chiefs the first time.
Then the Chiefs went again?
No. Then it was the Oakland Raiders.
They beat the Oakland Raiders 67.
Yeah, and then Super Bowl III.
Which was Joe Namath's name.
That was Namath, I guarantee.
Yeah, that I guarantee. And then Super Bowl IV, I think it was the Chiefs. I want to say that.
In 1970?
Yeah.
And who was that, Miami? I thought Miami. No, Miami 72.
72.
Miami 72, the undefeated season.
The perfect year.
The perfect year. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hank Strong was the coach for the Kansas City.
Oh, yeah. Audience, we are messing with it up in here.
Yeah.
We mess with it.
Yeah, we do it, man.
We do it. Check it out. Get the facts straight before we come on.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
They had Willie Lanier, Bobby Bell. These guys are like some of the top players in NFL history, you know.
But the Chiefs have never been known to be an offensive juggernaut like they were this
year.
Not in recent times.
Yeah, not like this. Not like this. Not even when they had Dante Hall returning kicks back. Tyreek Hill is the new Dante Hall, but he can do everything, you know. You know, not just return kicks, but he can receive and he can do things out of the backfield as well. He's one of those scat backs, those flex backs.
Right.
And that's what makes them so dangerous. I mean, they have a dangerous squad, but sometimes being a dangerous squad versus an experienced squad, like the New England Patriots are, that's what's probably going to be against Kansas City if they don't get it done today.
Right. Well, speaking of Kansas City, so if you're Kansas City, do you, you know, in light of what happened to Kareem Hunt, do we look into bringing him back next year?
No.
If you look in, because I'm like, if we looked at the tape, he just kicked the woman's shoe.
Well, yeah.
He kicked her shoe. He didn't really actually abuse her like that. He kicked her shoe.
And I get your point with that. I you know, but I guess domestic violence is domestic violence. I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I think the NFL kind of pulled the trigger. You know how in a boxing match, referees sometimes get criticized for pulling a boxing match too early, for stopping the fight too early, and a lot of people do feel that way. I have to go back and look at the tape again.
Yeah, he kicked her shoe. He didn't actually beat her up. She was outside of his door acting belligerent, yelling racial epithets, and he came outside, addressed her. It was a commotion, but at the end of the day, the only contact that existed between the young lady and Kareem Hunt was he kicked her shoe.
But you know what, though? I'm going to say this, and I'm not going against Kareem Hunt, but if you are a guy and you are one of the best running backs in the NFL, right? And you make money like you do. That means you're in the spotlight. That means you're basically a celebrity when you're out here playing.
Right.
You know, they turn this game on and they say your name 100 times a week. You know, that means you're in the spotlight. Kareem Hunt has to learn to just get himself. I know he didn't mean to put himself in that position, but he has to learn to let it go.
And let it go. Careful.
Be careful. Walk out of the situation. You know what I'm saying? And I get that. You know what I'm saying? Now, the thing is, according to Adam Schefter, I saw this morning on ESPN, that there are a lot of teams that are inquiring about him.
Yeah, they're going to they're going to let him. See, at first, you know, when we first discussed it, you know, I didn't look at the tape. I just heard domestic violence, young man. I'm like, uh-oh.
Right, here we go again.
Oh, yeah. Boy. But then I seen the tape. He kicked her in the shoe. Well, what are we talking about here? It happened in February. That's why the Chiefs didn't look into it. It happened back in February. I mean, they knew about it, but it's like they didn't think it was going to become like this.
Right.
You know, and that man, he was a factor. They better either bring him back or something. They better work something out, because the Ray Rice situation where you sit back and Roy Jones, your wife.
Right.
That's a problem.
That's a problem.
They can't let that go. And then they try to only give him 2 games or something like that. That caused a media thunderstorm.
That kind of started this whole ball rolling.
It did.
So the NFL, which you know they're like, yeah, you know, they're like the new sheriff at Wyatt Earp and everything. But you know, with Kareem Hunt, I mean, a kick in the shoe. Okay. You know, I think y'all need to talk about that.
And her foot wasn't attached to the shoe when he kicked it. It was just the shoe.
Yeah. Okay. You know, I think we may be able to excuse that one. It was an actual assault and battery.
Right.
He didn't go to jail, you know, for that. You know,
the only police he's guilty of violating is the fashion police.
Oh man.
Exactly.
Yeah. So and like I said, this show, we do not condone domestic violence
in any shape or fashion.
Right.
No way, shape, form, or fashion.
Right.
So let's not even get on that. But I'm just, when you're kicking the shoe,
we ain't laughing at the kicking the shoe. I think we're just laughing at Leon, I keep saying.
Yeah, I mean, somebody's going to live.
It's like an Allen Iverson rant he's going on.
Yeah, practice. Right. Okay, all right. He's missing the season. Cause, all right. But yeah. You know, that's how it happens.
They've gotten this far, I will say that. But he, and I've said this, you know, with a lot of people, and a lot of people said it to me. Listen, Kareem Hunt is one of those guys you need on the field.
You're going to need him.
He's on the field, man, on first and second down to get you to them third and shorts or avoid you from getting third down situations. He makes a huge difference in your offense. And, you know, of course, the Chiefs right now, I think they've only had one possession in this game.
And three and out.
And what's going on?
Well, now Brady's, they ain't three and out, but yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
It's just crazy on how you see New England's playing right now. It's Sony Michel that's really taking over, man. And to put him in a big spot like that as a rookie is, I think, is tremendous.
But you got to look at, like, especially in light of the Charger game, you know, when we lost it. We were so afraid of their pass attack. You know, we were running 7 cornerbacks at Tom Brady at the time.
And then they rushed the ball.
And they just rushed us.
Right.
You know, and then when we said, okay, let's sack the box. Uh-oh.
Now he's throwing it again.
Over the top.
Yeah.
Oh, what are we going to do? So, you know, it's you know, because that passing attack is, you know, this man is accurate. You know, he's like the sharpshooter of all sharpshooters. And he still has an arm. He's at age 80. He still has an arm.
It's his offensive line.
Yeah.
Man.
Say it again, John.
It's his offensive line. They give him time when he needs to throw, and they create the holes for the rushers when they need to run.
Is this offensive line as good as the offensive line of the Dallas team in the 90s? Can we go that far?
Man, I don't think it was an offensive line better than them, man.
Man.
To be honest with you, I really don't think it was. Yeah, I don't think it was an offense better than the Dallas Cowboys in the 90s. I really don't. The offensive line.
Right. Right.
I don't think it was an offensive line better. With Nate Newton and Martune, Larry Allen. Larry Allen's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So,
right.
You know, I don't think it was a line better than that.
So I got a question there.
Mm-hmm.
So, do you believe you know, I don't want to sound blasphemous because I love this guy. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah.
So, was Emmitt Smith as good as we think he was? I don't want to sound blasphemous. But, you know, he did have the offensive line of all offensive lines. And it's been pondered.
Well, okay. Well, let's make this a fair question. Is Peyton Manning, is Tom Brady, because those guys block for them.
Absolutely.
You know, are these guys as good as they are?
Well, football is the ultimate team game.
It's the ultimate team game.
Yeah, it's not basketball.
So, yeah, you're right.
It's not basketball.
It's not basketball at all.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, you are – Rice was great because Montana made him that.
And because the offensive line
– And vice versa.
Allowed the time.
The time. And his team was balanced. He had Roger Craig who could catch balls out of the – he was the originator of catching footballs out of the backfield. He had Tom Rathman as the fullback. John Taylor was his guy. Brent Jones at tight end. And he had great offensive linemen.
Yeah, football is like the closest game that coincides with the human – anatomy.
Because, mm-hmm.
you know, with you got billions of cells in the body, if one goes awry, you have cancer. And if in football, which is the ultimate team sport, but, you know, the quarterback and offense gets, you know, because offense sells,
mm-hmm.
and the quarterback is the face of the offense, they're going to get most of the credit.
Right.
But
and
when we look at football, everything has to go right.
Yeah.
In order for things to go right.
And how many offensive playmakers go up in the Hall of Fame and in their acceptance speech thank their offensive line?
Man, that's so crazy.
And how many of them pay for their offensive line to be there in Canton watching the ceremony?
Man, so many offensive linemen get forgotten.
Right.
You know, for real. Cause it's crazy because we look at the household names. No, I would say the most popular offensive lineman, did he actually play offensive line? The refrigerator.
He was defensive line.
He was a defensive line. The D-line. But if you look at, dang, man, that's crazy.
I'll tell you what. The D-line gets credit because they get sacks.
Yeah, exactly.
And that
they get sacks and they force probably more turnovers than anything.
If you have an individual statistic, then you get credit.
Yes.
What is your individual statistic for offensive linemen?
Pancakes. But that doesn't even count.
Or sacks not allowed.
Not allowed, yeah.
Especially if you're on your blind side.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
And that's not really publicized.
Tackles, yeah, if you're at the tackles positions especially. Yeah.
But
yeah,
no one really publicizes those stats.
Right.
The team keeps
Because it's hard to because of the way that they run, that the defenses run things. So, I mean, are we going to pin that on the guy who was supposed to pick that block up and he didn't?
Man. So, because if you give Barry Sanders Emmitt Smith's offensive line...
Yeah.
He'd still be in the league.
Man.
You give him his team.
You know, Barry actually
won three Super Bowls.
So. Wow. You know, Barry Sanders actually quit because he didn't have offensive line.
Yeah.
He's like, man, you got me offensive line.
He didn't want to sacrifice.
Yeah.
All that, you know, this guy was like probably the best for all you youngsters, for all the millennials who probably never remembered or never got a chance to see Barry Sanders run. He probably ran like that because he had to.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, man, the same thing with Donovan McNabb at the Eagles.
What was the precursor to Madden?
Tecmo Bowl.
All right, so maybe. All right, when did Madden come out? When was the first?
89.
Okay, 89. So we got Madden in our dorm room suite at Vanderbilt, and I had the Lions for one season. I only had three plays. Barry left, Barry right, Barry middle.
Yeah. Don't you dare throw that football with, who was it, Rodney Pete at the time?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. David, y'all can't even tell you who the wide receiver was.
It wasn't Herman Moore yet. I think Herman Moore didn't come in until like 94.
Man.
95.
Yeah, they did Barry Sanders the same way like the Cleveland Cavaliers did LeBron the first 7 years. And LeBron quit on him and left. Like, I'm out of here.
Right.
And, you know, they refused to let Barry Sanders off his contract. Like, no. You know, and the Lions were contenders at the time. You know, they had a lot of 10 to 60 seasons and everything like that. You know, they were always in the mix, but they could never really take it to the next level without that offensive line, you know. Man. So, you know, it's a lot to football. You know, like, if you look at, like, basketball,
mm-hmm.
I think the closest resemblance to football and basketball would be wide receivers. Because it's actually up to the wide receiver to get open.
Yeah.
You know. But, of course, he would not be able to catch those passes if it's not for the lineman to allow the route to develop. So it all goes back to the line. You got to have that line.
Rodney Pete started in 89.
Yeah. Okay.
And his backup was Bob Gagliano.
Uh-oh. Bob Gagliano. So
he had here's
Andre,
a list.
Where wasn't his backup?
He was there. He showed up in 90. He showed up in 90.
90. Okay. Yeah, because he won the Heisman in 89. So
here's some quarterbacks. Rusty Hilger in 88. Chuck Long also in 88. Todd Hans in 87.
Oh man, they look like the Minnesota.
Mikowski, of course, he was not till 96, but behind Scott Mitchell,
right.
So the Lions never really had stability at the position, a lot like the Miami Dolphins.
Until, really, Matt Stafford.
In 2011, Matt
Stafford would be their best quarterback.
And he's questionable.
Joey Harrington. John Kitna.
Charlie Batch.
Yeah, John Kitna was there.
John Kitna was about to become the QB coach for Dallas.
Next
year.
Because they're thinking about promoting Kellen Moore to offensive coordinator because they fired Scott Linehan.
Hmm. Wow.
Which I think is a bit of a question mark. I mean, if maybe they're looking for a more high up-tempo offense and Kellen Moore can coach that kind of thing. So maybe that's what they're looking for in that.
Oh, good question. So if you're, they have this $200 million deal potentially for Pat Mahomes on the table. Mm-hmm. If you're Pat Mahomes, do you take that?
Yeah, you take it.
I would give you a lot of money. Yeah,
I wouldn't do it. Yeah. I wouldn't do it. You're going to wind up like Joe Flacco.
But
you wind up like Flacco. Flacco took all that money after he won the Super Bowl, and this team abandoned him. He was, look at him now. He lost his job eventually.
But you know what though? But I think there's a difference between Flacco and Mahomes.
But
the thing about hold on, six years. Let me get this. Yeah, let me say this. Flacco got praised because he was the quarterback of a defense that took him to the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
Mahomes is going to get the credit because he put up 50 touchdowns this year, and he possibly can put up 35 next year.
Absolutely.
45 this year.
Not saying he doesn't deserve it.
Right.
He deserves it.
But
if you want to compete, though.
Right. Listen.
He takes that money here. You want to resign all your weapons that got you there. You got the AK-47, Sammy Watkins.
But it won't be his fault, though. See, the Chiefs are spitting up that money.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. See, the Ravens, they're looking like fools. Not Flacco. Flacco cashed his check.
Absolutely.
You know, he cashed his check. If somebody was to offer me $200 million, I'm taking it. Now, listen, I'm going to do what I do.
You going to be like Matt Ryan, though?
Well, who's to say I'm going to be like Matt Ryan?
But Matt Ryan took that money, and Julio was about the mutiny.
Well, that's true. But this is a league where it's like, well, because I don't think he's looking at Matt Ryan's situation. I don't think Julio's looking at Matt Ryan's situation. I think he's looking at Odell Beckham. I think he's looking at the other receivers in the league that are like him. Man, he feels like he's the best receiver in football. And you're taking the case of Antonio Brown, who right now, there are trade rumors up for him. And there's a rumor that came out earlier this week that he said that he wants to go to San Francisco.
Yeah, that's what Jerry Rice was saying. We need to get him.
And I said, oh, boy.
Like, for what, though? You want to go to Frisco? That's going to be crazy. I worked that out in Pittsburgh, because in Pittsburgh, you're the number one target. They cater to you. I mean, my God, what are you didn't get enough ketchup on your fries? I mean, you got the best player coach of all time with who's more of a player's coach than Mike Tomlin? He's the same age as you guys.
Right.
You know, he lets you
get away.
Yeah, lets you get away with stuff, unfortunately. You know what I mean? Especially if you're like I don't know the gentleman personally, but it's just not a good look. That during halftime, you're on Facebook Live while your coach is giving a passionate speech about how we're going to win the game. It's just not a good look. And now you're showing up to practice in helicopters?
Yeah.
It's not a good look, sir.
Yeah, it's really not.
It seems like you're putting yourself above the team.
It does.
Just a little bit. Yeah. Just a tad.
Figuratively speaking, right, John?
Yeah. Then you're exposing, you're going Jimmy Butler on us. man, I mean, I'm, you know, he got up out of there, but that's not, you don't want to do that to a team that's done. I mean, I said Antonio Brown's a great player, but it just seems to me that, you know, he might want to sit down with Dr. Melfi.
Yeah.
And just talk about it, you know, just like, what's going on? Are things going too right for you? You're like the number one target. They're not trying to trade. I mean, and it's going to look real bad on paper if you lose Le'Veon Bell 1 year and Antonio Brown the same year.
Right, yeah.
Man, you know, Pittsburgh don't fire coaches. But
I know they don't, but they should.
Now they're looking at Mike Tomlin all crazy.
Yeah, this was all. Yeah,
because he's probably under his
undesigned.
Under his watch, politics demand that somebody take the blame.
Yep, right.
It is right or wrong. Right is right, wrong is wrong. But, you know, once the media gets a hold of it, once we get a hold of it, somebody has to become the bad guy.
That's true.
This is what it is.
It is what it is, man.
So, and you're going for the authority figure. So, but back to Mr. Mahomes, I mean, you know, you know, I'm torn.
You're torn about Mr. Mahomes?
I'm torn. Oh, man.
About whether or not Mr. Mahomes should get his money.
I believe he should get his money.
But we'll be with Kansas City. Well, we'll be with Kansas City.
Yeah, he's going. He's not going anywhere.
No, he's not going anywhere.
Yeah. He's not going anywhere.
No, he's not going anywhere. It's just that I'm thinking to myself, you just want to, don't you like the Falcons, you know, who have to renegotiate, you know, because, you know, Pat Mahomes is going to get a lot of his receivers a lot of money. You know, they're a lot of these, like Sammy Watkins, we thought, you know, I mean, Sammy Watkins has always been a factor.
Time out, Leon. I just saw a statistic in this game. The Chiefs have only ran 8 plays, and they ran it from -2 yards. 34 plays for the Patriots. I'm telling you, that's how you stop a great offense, man. Keep them off the field.
He's like, I'm not even trying to even deal with this. Let's keep off the field.
Yeah.
Run the ball. But with Mr. Mahomes, I mean, he got these, you know, his receivers are going to want to get their money. A lot of people are going to get money, you know, and there's only so much, you know.
Well, it's games like this, too, where if he is going to get this kind of money, he's got to show it. But, you know, of course, oftentimes we've seen quarterbacks who haven't made a Super Bowl get money like this. So.
Yeah, they're not going to hold this as a rookie. They're not gonna, if the Chiefs happen to lose this game, which let's hope that it doesn't happen. I don't know if it's going to happen or not.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not going to hold that against him. Like, just like the Baltimore Ravens are not going to hold that loss to the Chargers against Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
That, if anything, they were encouraged by the, oh, okay, that's cool. Because look what happened to Jared Goff last year.
Yes.
Yeah. They took a bad L. No, you don't let it. That's a horrible. You let a team fly 3,000 miles to come through and smack you around like that in your own stadium. Yeah, yeah, they're in the Super Bowl next year. They came back upset. So, and on top of that, they're in the Super Bowl in Atlanta.
Right.
At that. So, you know, it is what it is. The ceiling is crazy for Pat Mahomes. So, do you believe that Pat Mahomes has a higher ceiling than is this like a better rookie campaign based on how far his team went in the playoffs than the other young man in Dallas?
Dak.
Yeah.
Patrick Mahomes threw for 50 touchdowns. He got his team into the championship game. Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, as we've talked a lot about the Cowboys, and I believe their big problem is Jason Garrett.
Yeah.
If they had a decent coach and maybe revitalize off. I mean, Dallas has just got too much talent to keep flaming out in the playoffs like they've been doing.
They do.
They should not be going 9-7, 8-8, 7-9 every year. And I'm kind of surprised at it that Jerry Jones is settling for this mediocrity. I think he needs to shake things up a little bit. He's just lucky that no one else is wanting to be dominant in that division.
Exactly.
And when you get a team that wants to be, like the Redskins they suffer an injury that completely crushes their hopes.
Yep.
Philadelphia kind of put up a charge late in the season to get in, but they were just too far back. And, you know, that sixth seed going to New Orleans, and in that, it was just too tough. I mean, it's just too tough. They're just lucky that no one in the NFC East can put it together in the correct way. Yes, the Eagles did get the Super Bowl last year, but, you know, the Super Bowl curse, which seems to affect everybody except the Patriots, just kind of caught up to them. Yeah.
So, back to the NFC East. You know, sources say that, you know, Wentz will be healthy in April program, and they're seeing Nick Foles off. They gave him $1 million bonus, though, for, you know, doing what he does, you know.
Well, he'll find a home somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll be the first person picked up.
So, right? Do you put Nick Foles on the bench during the regular season, then bring him out as your secret weapon during the playoffs?
But then, you see, that would be a hard thing.
That'd be a hard thing to do if you're Nick Foles, just to be sitting there.
It's completely unrealistic.
And if you're a quarterback, you at least want some way to get your skills sharp.
Exactly.
You don't want to come in completely cold. I mean, Nick Foles had some playing time during the season. Carson Wentz went down in the regular season for a little bit. Foles subbed for him, then Wentz came back, got his job back, and then it was just kind of going back and forth.
Right.
Nick Foles needs a team to call his own. And the Eagles need to figure out who they want to work behind.
Exactly.
And I think they're going to work behind Wentz simply because he's younger and he's got a higher upside.
Yeah, he just needs to go off and stay off the IR.
Right, and that's going to be tough for him.
That's going to be a tough thing.
So, Nick Foles, if I'm the Eagles, I keep Nick Foles, though. But at the same time, though, I think, is he good enough to be a starter? I mean, once you get tape on him, you know?
I mean, well, like I said,
he's tried it before in St. Louis and it didn't work out.
He went to the Super Bowl. He's led this team to the playoffs every time he touches them. You know, mm-hmm. he had that one year, that remarkable 27 touchdown, 2-interception year. That's when he took over for Vic. And, you know, he had an incredible year that year. Again, they won the Super Bowl with him last season. They got it right. They got the ship right, you know, this year. And got into the playoffs, and nobody expected them to even get in because of the way that they started.
And right. He was just an Alshon Jeffries miscue away
mm-hmm.
from being in the NFC Championship. I mean, that was not Nick Foles' fault. The reason why that pass was intercepted, Alshon Jeffries, unfortunately, hand-eye coordination was a bit lacking.
Yeah, yeah, and bless his heart, you know.
Bless his heart, yeah, because that was horrible. I mean, you know, but it is what it is.
It is what it is.
So, but yeah, will Nick Foles be Denver's next quarterback?
I was just about to suggest the Broncos as a potential landing spot for him.
That's a potential landing spot for every quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Right.
John Elway, who's going to save John Elway's job? Will he be the one to save John Elway's job?
I think John Elway has so much goodwill in Denver. I think
it'll be hard to
let him go.
Yes. He's got one more. I think there ain't enough goodwill. I'm going to quote a movie called Bugsy. That came out in the early 90s, where Bugsy, the gentleman who started Las Vegas, Warren Beatty, had messed around and let a young lady finesse him and the mafia out of $2 million cash to start Las Vegas.
Was that Annette Bening?
I think it was.
It was Annette Bening.
I owned the movie.
Okay.
And they were sitting at the round table like we are right now. Lucky Luciano was like blank old friends.
Yeah.
You know, Meyer Lansky, that's his buddy and everything like that. He was trying to give him all kind of chances, but he was like, man, my million dollars.
Yep.
I want to see a return on my investment. And I'm thinking that's the same way that John Elway is sitting here with management looking at John Elway like, yo, you've been to Super Bowl 18 times, won twice with Terrell Davis, you're a Hall of Fame. And everything that goes along with that, but you better produce by next year. Something better happen because you got the Chargers smacking us around. Oakland is going to Las Vegas, and you know we're taking they've taken some bad L's, but they were actually in the conversation this year. Denver was in the conversation, which is even worse than not being in the conversation because the being in the conversation and then not being in the conversation is like, what'd you rather do? You rather lose by 2 points? You rather get blown out? At least you accept your fate.
I'd rather lose by 2 points.
Oh, man. The excitement.
Because at least if you lose by 2 points, you can say, okay, we need to change this. We need to change that. We need to, quote, learn how to win, unquote. When you get blown out, you're like, okay, I don't know what the heck
you
do next.
You accepted your fate.
Exactly.
But, yeah, they need to change.
It's like you got
to
put some dynamite in the locker room and just press the detonator.
That's what managers are going to do. They're going to be like, hey, we need to change this. We're going to have to change that. Mr. Elway, you are Case Keenum, you know, unfortunately, I believe Mr. Case Keenum was a good idea. Yeah. I think it was a good idea. I would have did it.
Right, yeah.
You know, in light of what he did in Minnesota.
Well, that's kind of what John Elway has done. That's what he's done. He's gotten quarterbacks in based on what he is, they've done for other teams, and which I guess is probably the only way you can do it.
Right.
Brock
right.
Osweiler. Yeah. He got him because he was of what he did in Houston. Or is it
Houston got him based on what he did in Denver.
Yeah, Houston.
But oh, yeah.
Denver, okay. See, Denver had the offensive line, though.
Okay.
So he went to Houston and didn't have the offensive line.
Okay.
Which can go towards the conversation, to go towards our point about 3 points ago. We were like, hey,
if
such and such would have had the offensive line, how would it have worked? Was he really that good? Was Brock Osweiler really that good?
Right.
Well, with offensive line, I think I could have went off and did my thing with that. You know, so, but with that offense, so you got Case Keenum, which I think if I'm Minnesota, we got to work something out. And we got to bring you back.
Mm-hmm.
Or we got to be on the phone with also with New Orleans, and we got to bring Teddy Bridgewater back. Because that train wreck of a Kirk Cousins, and I think we caught it out there early this year. They had a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah.
And it folded. They were petrified and dilapidated. You know, Kirk Cousins' career, that's like a microcosm of Kirk Cousins' whole career, if you ask me.
Yep. They gave him a shot and he couldn't handle it.
Didn't handle it. He crashed the Lamborghini. So, if you're Nick Foles, I mean, we look at, like, Denver may have to inquire about him. You know, and
we'll see what they do.
Maybe what Tampa Bay going to do with Jameis.
That's another thing what will Tampa Bay do in that aspect? Because, you know, Jameis has not been able to keep himself on the football field. And same with Carolina. Are they going to start looking at Cam Newton a little differently now?
Well, the thing that I've heard about Cam Newton is that his shoulder injury is actually more serious than what it is. And that he could miss a lot of time next season.
Right, getting it
because
right.
of it.
And
so
they didn't fire the coach. So
Right. I think that they thought that Rivera, because I thought that Rivera was going to be out. I really did, because I thought he had lost control of the locker room after that 52-21 loss at the hands of Pittsburgh. They just couldn't get it right. This team started out like 5-0, I think, and they lost like six in a row. And it was the teams that we weren't even used to them losing to. So, yeah. But hey.
Yeah, I heard about Cam's injury through Shannon Sharpe on Undisputed. Uh-huh. He was like, Cam's hurt.
Yeah.
He's trying to play through it. They should have settled. I think they should have set him down. I mean, if it's like that.
Especially once you lose the playoffs, once you're not getting in,
yeah,
once you're eliminated.
You're just going to sit down somewhere, man.
Yeah.
Because it allowed Atlanta to kind of pass them and get that second standings in the division, which, again, will elevate Atlanta's schedule next season. Instead of playing like the Giants again, they'll get Philadelphia.
Uh-oh.
Instead of getting Detroit, they got Minnesota.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And
we got the entire NFC West. So we see
some W's.
Yeah.
The
Rams come here. Yeah.
Then you guys got to deal with Seattle, but then you got Frisco and Arizona, who are not looking factorish at all.
We beat Arizona this year.
Yeah, right.
To start that three game streak to end the regular season.
Again,
Atlanta will get their defense back in one piece. They're still going to have some choices to make, especially on the line. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have to break the bank for Julio Jones.
As expected, as they should.
And they're going to have to figure out, they can't keep either. They won't be able to keep both of Tevin Coleman or Devontae Freedom, so they're going to have to figure out which one they're going to want to cut loose, and it'll probably be the younger one.
Yeah, I think it'll be Coleman because Coleman is asking for more money. So
right.
He's asking for that top-notch, elite-level running back money, and he probably thinks he can get it somewhere where another team is lacking a running back.
Yes.
Or think about this, him and Kareem Hunt sitting out there. You put him and Kareem Hunt on the same team. Like, you give him to Brady. Come on, man.
Yeah.
He's not retiring until he's 50.
Yeah.
And it's going to be some more. Oh, my goodness. You know, Tom Brady has been good a lot. You know, for a lot of the millennials, he's been good their whole lives.
Yeah. Very. Very good.
So, oh, man. It's Brady. Rivers. You know what I'm saying? It's 0-7, 0-8, man. How are you going to be 0-8 against somebody? It's not basketball.
It's not basketball. Certainly it's not. We're If you get two players who are really good, you can contend night in, night out. Especially, well, high school level, you need two. College level, you need three. NBA level, you need four. That's simply because the level of competition is going up and up, simply because the talent pool is getting smaller and smaller. But let's talk college basketball for a little bit. And Dan, Daniel, you proposed something a little interesting, and I think it's maybe heretical. Mm-hmm. Certainly, yeah, it's definitely heretical to conventional sure. wisdom thinking. You said if you're should Zion Williamson just say, okay, I've proved what I needed to prove, I'm done this season, I'm declaring for the draft, right now.
I saw this on one of the networks, and I thought that this would pose an interesting question to us. Now, of course, the report is saying that I believe it was Scottie Pippen who said that he should shut it down for the rest of the year and focus on being a top pick in the draft, because what if he gets hurt or something like that? My thing is this, with all due respect to the great Scottie Pippen, because he was one of the greats, I somewhat disagree with what he's saying, simply because of the fact that we're comparing this to football here. Listen, that Bosa boy at Ohio State, Ed Oliver from Houston, those guys are sitting out from playing football so that they can keep their draft stock up. Football is one of the most violent sports in the world.
They were trying to keep from being injured in what they would refer to as a meaningless game.
As a meaningless game, right? Yeah, sure. Now, for Zion Williamson, these games aren't meaningless that he's playing now. He is in the ACC, okay? And this guy is a freak of nature. Now, would we tell LeBron to skip his senior year of high school so that he could stop, so that his draft stock could go down? You know, I see what people are saying. Of course, you can tear an ACL, you can do this, you can do that. But here's the difference with that. He's a freshman.
Right.
He's a freshman. What are we talking about here? He's a freshman. He gets to go back to Duke for another year.
Yeah.
And guess what he gets to do? He gets to medically redshirt. What are we talking about?
Yeah,
if the kid wants to play, let him play.
Yeah, that happened to I had a cousin by the name of James Forrest. He had a big shot in a Sweet 16 for Georgia Tech. He was actually him, Matt Harpering, Travis Best. They were all on the same team for another.
Mm-hmm.
And my cousin, who, you know, he should have went to the NBA. And he went to the NBA, but, you know, he was like, he never got a chance to make the regular season squad. But he went overseas, and, you know, he's able to still get his money and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened to him was he got hurt. You know, he is after his sophomore year, I believe, he came back for junior year and got hurt. And it haunts him. He's like, dang, man, I should have went off and, you know, left in like 90. He should have left. Or at least, you know, did what they're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it happens to people, you know. But it's up to – I was thinking about Coach K, like, dang, you know, Coach K is like this – you know, I'm pretty sure he's going to want to – oh, man, they're just driving the ball.
Yeah, they are.
He's going to want him, and he's going to want Zion in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
And does this go further, you know, to go off and, you know, with this D-League Gatorade situation –
You bring up a great point about the NCAA tournament. So, when you have, let's talk NCAA football versus NCAA basketball. In football, from start to finish, guys' draft stocks is going up and down.
Right.
Like, you probably
play to play.
Mel Kiper probably doesn't come out of his cave until maybe week 7 or 8 in the college football season, right? But in college basketball, it's different. We've seen draft picks R.J. Hunter, for example. Nobody really knew who R.J. Hunter was until he stepped in the NCAA tournament. So really, your conference tournaments and your NCAA tournament play is where it's at. You know, that's what I look at it to me. That's where your draft stock comes in. R.J. Hunter was selected he was selected high.
Well, I think he was selected in
first
the
round.
First round, but not,
well, not that
20,
high.
2022.
2022, because Boston was a very good team
yes.
that year. So he was selected like 2022. But that was because of the run he made in the conference tournament and especially in the NCAA tournament. You know, his draft stock went to the roof. And nobody knew
where he would have been. Especially when he hit that shot against Baylor.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, difference here is DeMarcus Simons, he had that performance against Cincinnati where he basically outscored the Bearcats by himself
the first five minutes of that ball game.
Exactly. And then he came back. So people know who he is.
Who he is now. And that's now why he's a household name.
Exactly. That's why when we had Ben Moore on last week, I asked him about his draft stock.
Right.
Where they think he might be going. But going back to this Scottie Pippen, mm-hmm. his son is a four-star recruit of his own, or highly rated recruit, and he just committed to Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. So next season, is Scottie Pippen Sr. going to be in Junior's ear saying, okay, you need to go for the draft in the middle of January? Will Bryce Drew tolerate any interference, meddling by in this case, Scottie Pippen, the father?
I don't think he'll, because of the way Bryce Drew is, I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think he will. But like it'll be in his ear, though.
Oh, yeah. If his son is dropping like 20, 25 a game.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. He's shut it down after game 15.
Admittedly, Vanderbilt is struggling this year. They're 0-5 to start SEC basketball men's play. First time in school history that's happened. Darius Garland, one of their other five-star recruits, out for the year after that was, I think, the second or third game. They do have one player in Simi Chitu, but there's just something wrong in that culture at Vanderbilt, and Bryce Drew's got to do something to get that fixed because he doesn't want those players to exit on him, and they're already talked that Garland won't come back next season anyway, although he did register for spring classes at Vanderbilt. That's certainly a sign, but we won't know anything more until after school breaks out and what happens if he registers for fall classes in 2019. Talking here on the Last Three Guys Do a Podcast, John Morgan, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolt. We're talking a little college basketball about Zion Williamson, his great talent over at Duke. And there is something to be said, guys, mm-hmm. about the college basketball experience.
Yeah.
Something that college football, while it's nice in itself going to a bowl game, it doesn't really have that flavor that college basketball has simply because of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and it's the tournament play. And you know what? This funny part about it is that NCAA football are trying to capture that with the college football playoff. But the thing is that you just don't have the pageantry. College football, we can look at a team and say, oh, yeah, they're going to beat that team. They're going to get that team. They're going to get that. Man, look at what happened to Virginia last year.
Just going
to
bring that up.
You know, look at what happened to them. We finally, we see a 16 seed beat a one.
Right.
You know, and that was it. What was it? UMBC.
A lot of upsets. A lot of upsets, though.
Yeah, but we had
But not an upset of that magnitude.
Yeah, we've never had a 16 beat a 1. Ever. And it never happened until last year. And Virginia. But that's the pageantry of college basketball.
That's what makes it so exciting, so unpredictable.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody's filling out their brackets, but what they're filling out is a puzzle. It's nothing but a mere puzzle that could get messed up after day one.
And it does get messed up after day one.
It does.
And in some cases, it gets messed up after the first four games in Dayton, Ohio on the Tuesday.
On the Tuesday. Right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So exactly. You know what I mean? Curse words are uttered that day?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah. You know how much paper was thrown away the first day. I remember when it happened. I was sitting in my living room and I said, and I can remember Jim Nantz saying it, the great Jim Nantz saying, what is wrong with Virginia? He was calling that game. He and Bill Raftery was out there calling that game. He said, what is wrong with Virginia? And I asked the same question.
If Bill Raftery went to a Waffle House, would he spontaneously shout, covered?
I would love that. I would love to be in a booth with him. Just to hear him saying right now, Daniel Bolton, the Dukies go.
A lot of people can't stand Vital, but mm-hmm. can handle Raftery. I'm the other way around.
I like Dave Vital.
I love Vital. Raftery just sounds like he's constipated.
but Raftery knows his stuff, though.
They both know their stuff. You know how McCamish, before it was McCamish. It was Alexander Memorial Coliseum.
Yeah.
Now, while it was, it seems to be every 5 years it gets remodeled. Now, this is back in the day.
Sure.
Richard Muster, longtime voice of Georgia Tech women's basketball. There was 1 year he didn't do Georgia Tech women's basketball, and I sat in for about 5 or 6 games. And one of the games, it was a doubleheader, women's and men's, between Georgia Tech and Virginia. Women go first, men go second. And it was the reopening of Alexander Memorial Coliseum after their latest round of renovations. Guess who's doing the game for the men? Dick Vitale, Brent Musburger. What I do for WREK, I walk over to the two of them. I say to Vitale, hey, you want to come on? Vitale comes on, and we talk a little men's basketball during the women's game. And every so often, I would have to jump in with who's scoring for Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
And that was one of the top five broadcasting moments.
Oh, wow.
Musburger just looks at Vitale and says, yeah, you go.
Yeah.
Then Dickie V.
Sure.
Dickie V, he's not going to pass that up. So, yeah.
Of course not.
So I actually called a little bit of a game
with Dick Vitale. Man.
I've never told you that story, and I'm surprised it's gone so long that I've never told you.
Now, what if it was Vitale and Bill Walton? Would you have been able to handle that?
I don't think I would have been able to. Did you see a couple weeks, 2 weeks ago, Snoop Dogg got on the Kings call, LA Kings call?
Yeah, I heard he did. I didn't see it, but I heard he did.
I want Snoop Dogg and Bill Walton in the same booth together.
Oh, man. Wouldn't that be classic?
That would be awesome. Every sports fan.
Wouldn't that be classic?
Signed every sports fan in America.
Exactly.
Put that on my Twitter feed. You can follow me on Twitter at John_Morgo. That's JOHN_MORGO. Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown are Twitterless, and they need to get on there.
Yeah, I do. I said that like 4 years ago.
Exactly.
I still haven't got on Twitter.
Man, I'm so old school. I just put a picture on my Facebook.
For that old Geico commercial where the old woman is posting photos on her actual wall.
Yeah.
That's Leon right now.
Yeah,
that's how that works.
That's not how this is supposed to work. It's so much stuff I'm missing out on. These guys, I mean, I look at John's Twitter and Facebook is lit up. He's on tweets, tweeting back and forth with people. And everything. I need to get involved with that.
Yeah, I'm just like, on Facebook, man. I don't do Twitter, Instagram, nothing.
Oh,
nothing
my else. Goodness.
Well,
it's
my Twitter connections that have given us all our guests.
Man.
Yeah, so.
I mean, Bob Rathbun follows me. Bob Rathbun, Rachel Barbo, Ben Moore. And I'm still
Sam Crenshaw.
Sam Crenshaw, of course. And,
You're older than both of us and more in tune with social media than both of us. I'm like, man.
Oh, you see Sam. He's during Georgia State or before Georgia State women's games. He does the ESPN3 games for Georgia State men's and women's. He's got his own Facebook Live, and he's showing the whole practice that's going on during that. And I just did a Twitter feed before our last home game against the Troy Trojans that Georgia State women actually came from 18 down midway third quarter. And 1-4. And a very interesting aspect of that game, they were tied at 76. Mm-hmm. Troy goes on a 4-0 run to 80-76. And in a couple games, that might have been it. Georgia State might have folded, but they get four baskets by four different players to pull out the 84-80 victory, including two steals that resulted in fast break layups. And all that occurred in the final 86-76 seconds of that game. So, you know, Georgia State, you say learning how to win, and that which I think is probably one of the more vague cliches in sports.
Yeah.
You say you learn how to win. How do you learn how to win? How do you learn how to get that final effort you need to put your team over the hump?
Well, the thing is about that, John, is that there are different scenarios of winning. You have being up by X amount of points and maintaining that lead. Or what if you're up by 18, 20 points and a team just goes on a run that you just can't stop? You're trying to stop the bleeding, and, yeah, you're able to stop it just right at the last seconds.
Great analysis.
And then you have other games where you're down by 25, and now I got to find a way to get back. I got to find a way to catch you, and you end up catching. It's just so many different ways to win any game in any sport, man. You have to know how to win, and that's basically what you have to do. And it's all about patience. That was a pass interference call. That really was against Jimmy Lee Lewis. Now I'm seeing the play.
Yeah.
When you see it in slow motion, yeah, they did miss that play, and then he didn't. The player didn't look back.
Yeah. So again, Sean Payton arguing that pass interference call that was not called effectively changed the effective outcome, robbed his team, the Saints, of a chance to go to the Super Bowl. But there are just so many little moments that
you
just can't. The thing with football is you can't just pick one moment and say, this is why we lost.
Yeah.
Well, the Saints had some drives that resulted in field goals.
They did.
And, you know, that's a reason you
Saints
lost.
Saints jumped up 13-0. They had the advantage of the game.
Right.
They just could not put the Rams away. And those games at the end, yeah, you don't make those calls like Leon said earlier, but at the same time, if it's that call, you make that call. But now that I'm seeing it and you're seeing it in slow motion, they probably should have made that call.
Yeah.
They should have made that call. Just like they missed the pass interference. I don't know how the hell they missed that pass interference by Kobe, by Mikael Roby Coleman. I don't know how they missed that one. But, it is what it is.
Exactly. You know, and the Rams are going to go to the Super Bowl. And we're going to wrap up our podcast in a little bit. I'm going to go first, and then I'll turn it over to Daniel and Leon because we're talking about the Rams and Sean McVay, as we said earlier, the youngest head coach in NFL history to go to a Super Bowl. Could be the youngest to win it if his team comes out on top in 2 weeks. And he's got very, very hard cemented Atlanta ties. This is a reunion for him, coming back to his hometown. He went to Marist School, a little bit in Brookhaven, north of the Atlanta area, and he was actually I don't think they won the championship, but he is
the
quarterback.
One of the best of all time
there, right? Yep, one of the best quarterbacks of all time there at Marist, and I think the L.A. Rams should honor him by holding a practice at Marist Stadium. At the high school, full practice at Marist, Alan Chadwick, Tommy Marshall, athletic director. Alan Chadwick, coach of the Marist War Eagles, the winningest active coach in Georgia football, has a chance to become the winningest all-time coach in Georgia football. He only needs about 100, but he's in his early 60s. He could probably get there, averaging 10 wins a year. Let's make this happen.
Yeah, I like that.
Daniel?
All right, man. So, you know what? Before last night, I was going to talk about one person, but I'm going to talk about two now. I'm going to talk about two different stories. First off, the original story was number 45, which is Donald Trump, okay? Something that he did this week that I did not approve of. Of course, we don't get into politics.
We don't
here,
get into
okay?
politics.
But if
we
it's
might,
something...
We just need the right guest.
Exactly. But you know what? But if it's sports related, I will get into it. So, of course, every team that wins a championship gets invited to the White House. The Clemson Tigers got invited to the White House. Shame on you, Donald Trump, for feeding that team. This is the same team that beat the Alabama Crimson Tide. That is the same team that has been the best team in college football the last 6-7 years, and they knock them off. And what do you give them? What do you serve them? Happy Meals and Big Macs and Wendy's Burgers and all that crap. No, shame on you, Donald Trump.
See,
if
he's going to do that, why not just rent out a Golden Corral?
Yeah, do something. Do something. But kudos to Michael Strahan because he invited him to the house for lobster and caviar after he heard about that mess. The second person that I want to bring up is one Adrian Broner. There was a fight last night between he and Manny Pacquiao. Pacquiao beat him by unanimous decision. Now, I don't know if you, and we can't play the clip of his post-game rant, his post-fight rant, because he and Jim Gray got into it, but basically he said he won the fight. He thought he won the fight. He thought everybody was against him. Well, Mr. Broner, if you're listening, and I don't really care if you are or not, but if you are listening, I have the totals according to CompuBox. You landed 50 out of 295 punches, which was 17%. 11 out of 115 jabs, that's 10%. And 50 out of 295, which was your total power punches. Manny Pacquiao landed 82 power punches. That was 42% out of the 197. So if you think you won that fight, sir, you are sadly mistaken. I'm just going to let you know you didn't win that fight. He kind of corrected himself a little bit for... in the post-fight press conference. So he was all right. He gave credit where credit is due. But Adrian Broner, humble yourself. Donald Trump, do better.
Adrian, man.
Adrian, reminds, he's like a Soulja Boy. I want Soulja Boy and Adrian Bronner to succeed.
Yeah.
You know.
You do.
And right. It's really, you know, are there, both their behaviors are really erratic,
mm-hmm.
You know, a bit narcotic-ish.
Yep.
But it's like, he's a likable dude, though.
Right.
He's a likable guy, man, but then you have this. Oh. Oh, you know. Ah.
It's your turn, Leon. unless that was it.
Unless that was it.
You know, I just had to your point.
Yeah. Did that throw you off?
Yeah.
Threw your last minute off.
Oh,
well, I'll tell you what. Next week, we'll give Leon 2 minutes to go over his final point. And, sorry, we better wrap this up right now, folks, because we're starting to lose it here. Thank you very much for joining us for the last three guys to do a podcast. John Morgo, Daniel Poulton, Leon Brown. This is our 18th episode. Super Bowl 53 is in 2 weeks. It's in our backyard, quite literally. You're going to want to stay tuned with us. We're going to have a lot of content coming out of it for that big game. You're definitely going to want to join the three of us for that. We'll have all sorts of announcements, hopefully, on our next show as to exactly what we will be providing for you in terms of our Super Bowl content. So I can't wait for that. It's what we've been working towards all year. It's finally upon us. It has finally arrived. And now we can try to give you everything that we've had percolating in our little heads and bring that to you. Excellent content coming your way. You're going to want to be here for that. Thank you so much for joining us for
Leon Brown
and
Leon a minute, Dan.
John Morgo. Tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell someone you've never talked to before. It's a great icebreaker about the last three guys to do a podcast. We'll see you next week,
folks.
He's
going to take mine.